Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and today I get to be on the air with Fred Gallien. Hello, Fred. How are you today?
All things considered, good.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because here we are on March the 23rd, 2020. Both of us, I assume you are in Atlanta?
Yes.
Okay, I am in Austin, Texas. So before we go on, could you give me a little perspective of what you're seeing, what you're feeling, what you're seeing in the world of Atlanta?
I think Atlanta is just like everywhere else right now. It's been a little over a week since everyone realized things were really serious. It seems that we should have known earlier because things were more widespread than we realized earlier on.
Right.
But I think people are still processing. I think most people are following the recommendations of social distancing, but I don't think enough. I think people are slowly taking it more seriously, and I hope people realize it, that we're in this for the long haul.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't think this country is set up real well to deal with this. I think with lack of access to healthcare and so many people being, just struggling, getting by week to week, and as businesses close down, there are going to be people who need immediate help. So I'm just hoping that businesses and government and people will stand up and help each other.
So how are you keeping your attitude? Are you wired optimist, wired pessimist, wired in the middle? What's your particular ground state?
I don't know. The past week I've been feeling really just down and anxious about it. Honestly, I feel it's almost like trying to go through the stages of grief. Shock, denial, anger.
Absolutely.
So I'm trying to let myself kind of feel all that and not deny it and process. So hopefully when things get worse, I'll be at a state where I feel strong enough to be able to do my part and help other people. So
wonderful. Wonderful.
That's about
now,
where I'm at.
in March of 2020, I'm 71 years old. How old are you today?
I usually tell people the age range I play.
All right, what is the age range you play? Where do you exactly? As an actor, you have to say, well, I can play here to here.
Yeah, no, I usually play like 38 to 50, but
play 38
no one,
to 50,
I'll tell,
you can
I'll tell
play
everyone
that range.
On the show, but no one can tell anyone else. I'm actually 51.
So tell me, in going on, all right, so me being a generation down from you, we're the boomers, you're the Gen Xers, right? I mean, the millennials, right?
I think I'm Gen X. I think I'm somewhere in the cutoff point.
Yeah.
Not sure.
All right, so however else, those are such bizarre. It's like, I was wondering the other day when they talked about gender fluid, and I was looking for where in Walmart I would find the gender fluid. In the automobile section, where would I?
Oh,
I just wanted to make
funny sure
I had. Thank you. For coming from a pro, that gives me a great deal of joy. So
yeah, I couldn't find where to put it. It's like oiled windshield washer fluid. I couldn't figure out where that went in my car. So I wanted my car to be, accepting.
Exactly.
Yes.
So you entered into the idea of wanting to be on stage or wanting to act where? Where did the intersection of Fred Gallien and acting and performing intersect?
It's been a long road. I started doing stuff like in middle school. And kind of caught the bug then and enjoyed it, and then kind of got turned off in high school with a few productions and an instructor I actually didn't care for. But then in my late 20s, I decided to try doing some stage work again and did that in Buffalo, where I spent most of my life.
Yeah.
And then ended up moving to Chicago, did a bunch of training there, did a bunch of theater there. backed off from it again, came to Georgia, went to Athens, finished a degree in atmospheric science, and did theater on and off. So came back to moved back to Atlanta to help take care of my father during his last couple years. And after he had passed and I'd gone through a divorce, I was just at a point where I'm like, okay, I can kind of do what I want now. And just with everything booming in Atlanta, I said, you know what? I'm going to jump back into acting and just go head first. And I told myself, that was probably 2.5 years ago, a little more. And I said, I'm not going to even think about backing off for at least 2 years. So I gave myself New Year's to 2020. And only then would I evaluate where I'm at, if I'm making any progress, and if I want to continue. And things have gone pretty well the last couple of years.
Exactly. And that's a lot of what I want to talk about, because in Atlanta, there is a big film hive of activity.
Oh, yeah. It's become the number
one
location.
Tell us about it.
Help
people know that people don't know exactly what has happened in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's been, I've been, really involved for almost 3 years now, really 2 years doing some on-camera work. But in the last 10 years or so, after they passed those tax incentives, things just started booming and they haven't stopped. It's the number one location for film production in the world now. I think it's been that way for a couple of years. Lots of people on all sides of the film industry are here and continue to move here. You know, actors, crew, everything else. As far as acting goes, I know it started off where it was really just these, the smaller roles they call co-stars, often five lines or under. And that was pretty much all they were, the only opportunities that were here for actors in Atlanta. Because the talent pool here has been continually trying to raise the bar, where they think, okay, we can look in Atlanta and we can get some really good talent we can trust there instead of having to bring people in from the coasts. And that's been slowly getting better. Opportunities are improving, especially as a lot of more people move here. So the bar, the talent here keeps getting raised. I'm hoping I'm part of that as I keep working and trying to get better and adjust. And now you're getting a lot of guest stars and you're getting occasional series regulars.
Nice.
The show I did that I had the co-star in, The Outsider, that HBO show, is really good. I saw at least 5-6 people that I knew. A lot of locals doing some decent guest star, co-star roles. So that's phenomenal.
Nice.
So unless you're really established and really auditioning for series regular roles and stuff, there's no better place to be for opportunity right now than Atlanta.
That is terrific. So how do you as an actor get better at your craft? Now, I realize reps, but what's your own internal journey that is growing your craft?
Well, I did a fair amount of training in Chicago, mostly Meisner-based, which I'm not sure people are familiar with, but it's all based, honestly, on the same thing. It's about just being truthful in imaginary circumstances.
Beautiful.
And really just the more I do it, I keep taking classes, trying to get more ideas, more tools to use. But in the end, it's just letting anything I worked on go. And it's really just being honest and fearless after you've done the work and trusting it'll happen. And that can be tough.
Wonderful.
When the stakes are higher, it can be tough. So it's just to keep going, remembering why I'm doing it, continue studying and learning. And after every performance or audition, anything I do, I look back and say, what worked, what didn't work, how can I get better? Because the goal is just to be honest and to move people or just entertain and make them laugh. But there's got to be a certain honesty underneath it all to make anything work. And that's where that's where I think I can affect people. And that's what affects me as well. That's, to be able to feel alive and not have the mask you have to wear in normal life and be politically correct or whatever. You can be anyone and do anything.
Amazing. Have you, when you look at other actors, who are the people that move you? that just give us a little bit of reference, because not everyone, one of the things that I do a thought experiment of three guys coming home from the Sermon on the Mount, and yeah. they have three different takes to exactly the same, one of the most famous speeches or presentations that has come down, but they have three totally different takes depending upon the internal. So what is it that, who is it that moves you? Give us some examples so I can know a little bit more about you. How would I learn about you from that?
That's tough. I usually don't have like a top list, but you know, people
just
that
lately.
Have
it
just,
can be
just
lately.
Like a vulnerability. Like if I think mm-hmm. of actors, you know, two very different actors who I admire in different ways. Tom Hanks, who everyone loves, mm-hmm. is just always so honest. You know, he just seems believable and vulnerable. Yep. Another actor I've always loved is Gary Oldman. You know, I mean,
yes.
I find him to be believable, but sometimes I'll watch a movie and not realize it's him till halfway through. He's one of the ultimate chameleons.
Yeah.
So it comes down to people that are, that just, you know, I watch them in something and I forget they're an actor. I'm just engrossed in the story and I'm moved by it and relate to it.
You know, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because this is one of the things that I have been so adamant about, is that please make me care. I want to care about a character. I need some investment in that, much more than the theme of the story. I need to have someone that I can care about in order for me to stay engaged.
Yeah, and that's one reason I love all these, you know, cable and TV series that have become so popular. They're more like novels than short stories. And I think inherently they're all character-based, no matter what's going on. And you get really invested in these characters. And the most fascinating thing is obviously characters who are conflicted and who you feel conflicted about. You know, there's nothing better than to see someone who's doing things that are kind of morally repulsive or reprehensible, but somehow you're still sympathetic to them. You see how they're torn. You know, because most people who do bad things in life, you know, like say people are the heroes of their own story, or somehow they feel justified or that they have no choice. And to understand how things happen, how people operate, it's the only way to maybe make changes.
Yeah.
So there's nothing better than seeing like a villain you sympathize for and are torn about.
Do you look
at a script?
And I've
played some silly people and I've played some really bad people on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you look at a script? How do you evaluate it to say, do I want to try for this role or not? Are you at a place where you can sit down and say, you know, I just don't, that's not a script deep enough or a place where I want to go, even though I could audition for it?
Yeah, when it comes to, you know, union stuff and big TV and film, it's pretty much you know, audition for whatever. And I'm still at the point where, you know, I was in it for about a little over a year before I booked any big roles. And those were all not, you know, on big productions. And those were all like, you know, the co-stars, the five lines and under.
Sure.
And it's still a big deal because people don't realize how competitive it is for all those roles.
Oh, are you kidding me? It's huge. It's huge.
Oh, yeah.
It's a tremendous amount of competition there.
Like statistics, approximately, from what I can remember, is for every of these small roles, you only get a chance if you have an agent. And the casting directors will put out the audition notice. They'll get probably at least 2,000 submissions.
Mm-hmm.
They'll pick 40, maybe 50 people to audition, and one person gets it. And you could be in the running at the top and never know, because they usually cast off tape. So if you're getting a lot of auditions, you're doing good and in the game. And if you book one out of 20, you're actually doing really well.
I'll say.
And those are
so how did you approach it? How did you approach it? All right, so you come out, you've worked with Second City, you've done a lot of your work in Chicago, you come back, you take care of your father before he died during that process.
Yeah.
May I ask, since this is something that many people are going through right now, so I'd like to just put a parenthesis around this. And would you, if you're comfortable sharing this, share a little of what you learned about yourself during this time of taking care of your father?
Well, I learned, and then actually, and I went through a divorce shortly beforehand in Athens. That was probably, the divorce was actually probably the hardest thing I've ever been through for a lot of reasons.
Wow.
Even though it wasn't a long marriage, you know, I didn't know if I'd get through it, but somehow I just, like I was saying about the whole thing now, to an extent, I just let myself feel it without trying to get dragged down to the point of no return. And there I found strength and, you know, more vulnerability and pain, which is always a learning experience. With my father, I feel fortunate. We were never that close. In the last couple years I spent helping him, he wasn't doing well. He was in a lot of pain for that time. We didn't have much in common or talk much, but a lot of that tension we had in the past was gone. And there was a love there. And I got that time with him. And the time I spent in the hospital with him, in the end, as hard as that was, there was love there, and I didn't feel anything went unsaid before he passed. So that's just something I'm grateful for.
There is an initiative here in Austin, a circle of men, and there are hundreds of them that are in there, but this particular is called In Search of the New Compassionate Male. And how do we connect with ourselves? How do we as men grow emotionally? And it's lovely, as tragic and as much of the pain that you've gone through, it inspires me deeply, Fred, that you're sharing and how your process of how you're going through this and processing these emotions rather than just slamming them down and putting.
Yeah, we can't. It's just not healthy. You know, if you bury things, they're always going to be there. And I don't, you know, some of the masculinity stuff from the past is just not healthy. And to me,
no.
I just remember, you know, strength is vulnerability. And feeling the pain, but getting through it. Strength is admitting when you don't know something, admitting where you're wrong, you know, saying you're sorry. To me, that's all strength. Just like courage is not a lack of fear, it's going forward in the face of fear. And we're all human. We all feel. So I think there's nothing there that's against even a kind of typical ideal of manliness. I think you just take that and say, this is what strength is. Male or female.
Wonderful.
And that's what life
Wonderful.
Is. You know, you got to be alive. You got to feel the good and the bad.
Exactly. It has to be, we have to have the contrast in order to be able to know. When you came back to Atlanta, did you already have an agent?
No.
All right.
You know,
so
it's like,
How did you approach that? How did you approach to get into the game, Fred's story?
Yeah, I got lucky. I had a friend from Athens that was doing a benefit that was just reading a bunch of plays at a theater and asked me to come and read something. And that was about exactly 3 years ago. And did that, met some people in Atlanta, decided, hey, I'm going to audition for a couple of the smaller professional theater companies. Did that, got a role in something, and then just the theater thing started taking off, started auditioning and auditioning more. And I just worked as an understudy at the Alliance, but I'm auditioning there, working to get on stage. And that's, you know, kind of the biggest theater in the Southeast. But
okay.
I went to, yeah, so it was about 2.5 years ago, I went to this, it's a SAG-AFTRA symposium, the union. And there's a bunch of agents talking, and they all had boxes for headshots and resumes. And I had a decent headshot. It wasn't great. I had a bunch of theater experience and training, but no real film stuff. But I just threw it in all the boxes. And I had one agent get in touch with me and say, hey, I'd like you to submit a self-tape. You know, you got training. I like your look. Let's see what you can do. So I got lucky just getting that opportunity because no one else would look at me without credits. And I recorded, did a self-tape, sent it in, and she got in touch with me an hour later. So,
how nice.
I lucked out, you know, but at the same time, at that point, I was feeling fearless. I'm like, I have nothing to lose. Most people, you know, you got to do, you just keep working, mm-hmm. you train, you do student films, you do indie stuff, you do all you can do, you get a reel together, and you keep submitting, and a lot of it's luck, too. Does an agent, you know, they need someone of your type? You know, it depends on how saturated your demographic range is right now.
Yeah.
So that's
and
how it worked for me.
As you're looking at it, as you're looking at the scene work that you're doing, here's the thing that I'm interested in. Let me change directions here for a second.
Sure.
Suddenly we have had more providers of content than there's possibly mm-hmm. hours for any one human being to watch. But
oh, yeah.
with so many continued providers and continued increase, the time is not going to stop. The hours don't stop. There is going to be a need for content. And it feels like to me, I mean, not everyone is going to make Tom Hanks or Matt Damon money. That's kind of like the outside orbit. But within this, I would love to be able to see an entire universe of working actors and writers and producers and crew who can make livings the same way that you would, you know, you'd have a job. You actually have make livings in doing and producing content. While it would not
yep.
be Matt Damon money, it would be covering their bills and their health care and their car payments and the work that they're doing in this, almost like it would have been back in Shakespeare's time when you'd have a company that would be paid that kind of work. I don't know what I'm talking about Shakespeare's time. Please don't. I'm just tossing that out there. But that this would be possible with all the content that's needed to be created if we were able to do that.
Yeah. There's certainly a lot more opportunities now than there's ever been with all the content being created. As far as, you know, unless if you're really established and you're a member of the union and you work regularly, you can get
mm-hmm.
benefits.
Right.
The stats there, though, are like 5% of union actors make enough to not have to work other jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that's kind of the way it is. I think with any art, that making a full living off it is just tough.
Sure.
I think if you can book regularly, I think there's a lot of things with people creating their own content. But there's so much out there, it's tough to create something and get traction where you're actually making a profit at all. Theater companies, a lot of them, theater companies don't typically have just a ensemble they always use, but you can make some okay money if you're union in the theater and working regularly.
I see.
So I think there's more chance to make at least a significant partial income with this if you keep working. But it's like any art form, it's, you know, you're jumping in there, you know it's difficult, and you're hoping
Absolutely.
To make something.
So
I'd love to see what you're talking about too, but
yeah, exactly. That's just a thought experiment that I was running in my head. Fred, if you're thinking, here you are 2020, this is the end of or near the end of the 2-year window that you gave yourself, right?
Yeah.
So how does it look? What's your thought? When does Fred sit down with Fred and say, okay, Fred, it's time to have an evaluation and a plan ahead?
Yeah, I already did that.
All right.
I mean,
Could you let us in on the meeting notes from that, please?
Yeah. I mean, I actually didn't really think about it because the answer was already there. There's a long way to go that I'm hoping to go, but
Absolutely.
I never thought I'd be where I'm at now, you know, 3 years ago from doing a reading
How
for a benefit
cool.
to working with some big professional theaters and doing work that mattered and having mm-hmm. inroads with the big theaters in town and people know who I am. Two, I've worked on over 20 indie film projects the last 2 years and booked my first 3 union gigs last year. So, I mean, my first union gig, I'm in a scene, an opening montage with Ben Mendelsohn and Jason Bateman in HBO's The Outsider.
Wow.
And it's this co-star role with a few lines, but it's this opening montage. I'm like, where the hell am I? You know, I never thought that I would be on set with, I mean, they're honestly two of my favorite actors too. And I'm like, okay,
cool.
You know? So yeah, there's ways to go, but I'm on the ladder and we'll see if I can climb up anymore. But
That's wonderful.
It's exciting. It's kind of scary, but to be able to get these chances to work with some great people, some of the stage work and independent work, some of it has been really meaningful to me. So can't make a full living off it now, but it's something that I'm not looking to give up anytime soon.
How wonderful. I'm so glad.
So
I'm
I feel
so
very fortunate and grateful. There's certainly work and I'm still trying to improve, and the challenge from going to stage and screen is both less and more than people would think.
Yeah.
But you just get comfortable in that environment, keep trying to do good work and try to be fearless and affect people.
So give me your, I know how much, in having done television production for as long as I have, since actually since 1976, in doing that, I understand how chopping things up and rather than having the continuity of the stage, but do you approach the roles differently?
Not really. I mean, the challenges of kind of adapting to the new medium, the best advice I ever heard came from Jeff Daniels. I heard in an interview, who's, you know, came from stage. A lot of the actors, everyone knows, did tons of stage work. He just said he just plays to the front row, because really, as far as size goes, and everyone's worried about being too big or too small, you're just playing where the camera is. In a sense, you're unlearning what you've had to learn on the stage to play bigger, and you know you can bring it down depending on the size of the shot. But the biggest thing to me is, yeah, the preparation, because a lot of times you don't get a rehearsal and you have to go over something. And if it's a smaller role, it can be more difficult, and you have to go in there prepared with it feeling real and honest without that time to prepare with the other actors usually. And then cutting things up, it can be tough too, because you're going into something intense and you've got to be there right then. So there are challenges, but at the same time, you don't have to worry about what size you're playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and where you're, I'm so fascinated with the opportunities that there are to be in a role. And do you get a chance? The problem when I act, when I've done this and when I've done improv, as you've gotten a chance to do, is trying to get out of my head and into my body.
Yeah.
To be rather than in my head. I mean, because I really run things through my head too much. I just really, that's really where my hard work goes. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the primary challenge for all actors, honestly. Oh, and as far as improv, I took a couple classes at Second City is all. And I've done some improv, but, you know, I kind of list that on my resume because it's nice to list. But it's taking, you know, with improv, it can be more frightening but easier because you have to be right there and out of your head. But yeah, you get a script and you're analyzing it and you know what you're going to say, and to not think ahead and to not, you know, the whole thing is like, come up with this, but don't be out there presenting, you know, showing, just do it. Because, and it's hard, you know, to describe. There's no like, oh, I can tell it's because of this or that, but I can tell when an actor is going through motions and trying to show us something rather than being there. Am I seeing acting, even though it's good acting, or am I forgetting that's an actor? And that's hard. And that's a matter of being fearless and trusting yourself, which I think everyone struggles with. And I mean, I was always a science guy, so it's easy for me to be intellectual in my head. So that's just always a challenge. But it's saying, you know, do the work, however you prepare that works for you. And when you get there, it's just talk to the other person, let things happen, trust that what needs to happen will happen because you know what's going on. And that just takes practice to get comfortable and just a constant willingness to fall flat on your face, which you often will.
Oh, we will.
You know?
But when it happens, when it all comes together and you get that great scene or that moment, I don't know that there's anything quite like it that I know of. I know of when I've done stand-up or I've gotten so when something just lands and that moment happens.
Yeah.
That is an extraordinary experience. I can't intellectually tell someone what that's about if they've never experienced it, or how deeply that feeds me at a profound cellular level.
I'd say it's like with anyone, it's like in real life, you have those moments where you're in your head or you're self-conscious, you're wearing the social mask, and you have those moments mm-hmm. when you're either with somebody or you're doing something. Maybe you're just even out in nature taking a walk and you have those moments where you're just connected, where you're just not in your head, where you just have this sense of being in the flow. It's kind of like that. It's just this feeling of being really alive. And it's hard to come by. Sometimes those moments are fleeting. But when I get that, when I'm acting on stage or film, the great thing is, too, is I don't have any constraints. I can be this person doing horrible things. I can do whatever. And it's got to come from that place of honesty where that person thinks what they're doing is justified. So I don't have these moral limits when I'm acting. But I can show human behavior in ways that matter and affect people to give them insight. So it's a sense of being just really alive, just like skydiving, maybe. I don't know.
It is.
And, you know, I'll come out of it and I'll remember kind of what I did, but at the same time, not, because it just, I let it happen. Yeah, there's nothing like it.
I love how you said that, because I had an experience recently where I went in to get some gas, and the guy behind the counter, I went to pay because it wouldn't work out at the pump, and we, for some reason, we got into a spiritual discussion, and he said to me, he says, at the end, he says, "I wonder who you will be when you come back and see me next time." And I said, "Beg your pardon?" He says, "Everyone is like a river. You never you come to the same place, but there is different. It's not the same river."
Yeah.
And that's where
I think we're all, you know, we all follow like a path in life, and I think we're all constantly changing and learning. At least that's how it's supposed to be. I think it's easy to feel locked in or stuck or like, this is how I believe. But if you remain open to new information, to new feelings, we have the ability to constantly grow and change and learn and gain wisdom, which to me is often wisdom is realizing how much you don't know.
Yes.
But yeah, like, you know, I look back and I'm the same person in a lot of ways, but I've learned a lot and I've allowed things to affect me as best I can. And that's being alive.
Yeah.
So I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, not a drastic change, but, you know, every day, hopefully we are a little different, or we're thinking, we're trying to become better versions of ourselves, happier versions, more fulfilled versions.
It is. And I have to believe, because I wonder about that, because sometimes when I see an actor and I see someone and I have a personal theory, and I have not validated this, and I'll bet you that there are 20,000 professionals that would refute me, but I'm going to put it out there anyway, that an actor cannot play emotionally deeper than that person has experienced themselves and make it real for me.
I think, obviously anything I say is my opinion, my perspective. I think that's partially true. I think you can, but it's harder. But everything relates to what we've gone through. So,
yes.
But I can go through something that I haven't gone through, but I understand it somewhat. And sometimes mm-hmm. it could be, I think if we see other people go through things and we can really empathize, even if we haven't gone through it, then our imagination can fill in those holes. Because
exactly.
we would, but you know, if you can fully imagine a circumstance that you haven't been through, it without
yes.
thinking, I think it automatically relates to other feelings that you have.
Yes.
Let's say I did a short play where I come back. I got, you know, in a car accident years ago, drunk driving, crippled someone permanently and spent years in jail. And I got out and I came to her door because I needed to talk to her. And so I've never done that or permanently injured somebody, but I could imagine it. You know, how would I react? How could I live with that?
Well, this is my question. Exactly. But this is my question. If someone did not have that level of empathy, just a level of ability to be empathetic,
yeah.
would they even go to that place where it would make it believable enough for me to be able to believe it when I watch them do it?
No, I think that's part of it. I think most actors are naturally just empathetic
yeah.
and kind of vulnerable, which is the tough thing. You're supposed to have tough skin, but be vulnerable. And if you're that way, like I said, like the whole Meisner thing, which, you know, goes into mm-hmm. every method really, is to live truthful in imaginary circumstances. So a lot of times
yes.
you'll relate something to something you've gone through. Maybe something's exactly or like what I've gone through.
Sure.
Or it's not. But somehow through my imagination, I can tie in what it would be like. If I fill in all those details, it can become real to me and I can react as if it happened. And that's tough, and that's being vulnerable. And that's where some people might want to show it instead of living it.
Yeah.
Which I do a lot. And it's always, you know, the goal is to find those moments which can be hard to reach. Honestly, sometimes if something is really close to what I've experienced, like too close, it can almost be harder.
Mm-hmm.
If a character's a lot like who I am, it's harder because somehow maybe I feel like I'm showing too much of my real self. And I have to remind mm-hmm. myself that I don't have to tell anyone that's my real self afterwards.
Oh, by the way.
So I think it's a challenge to show something honestly you've never experienced if it's really far from what you've gone through and it takes work. But I think if you're in touch with your emotions, you can create this imaginary circumstance and imagine how would I really feel and react. And you can do it.
Okay, we have about 6 minutes left. What have we not talked about that you would like to talk about today?
Let me think. Well, I have to do, a promotion for my new indie film that just came out.
You're going to have to put a link on. We're going to have to put a link to make sure this is the E-listers.
Yeah, yeah. We just had a premiere. It was a little over a week ago, which we had a big group, which is kind of scary to think back on now. But that was days before everyone realized how serious this coronavirus mm-hmm. thing was. But had a full house. It's the first time I saw the film. It was hilarious. It should be up on Amazon shortly. I don't have an exact date, and I will give you the website with all the information on it. But it's this – we made it for $20,000, all local Atlanta talent, just a huge cast and crew, shot 70 pages in 7 days.
Holy Christmas.
I saw the call sheet the first day, and I said, who are these guys kidding? And they did it. You know, it's a group of people that worked together a lot before, and – there wasn't that pressure, like we don't have much time. It was a huge cast, a huge ensemble, lots of extras, and they did something pretty special. It's a comedy. I'd call it somewhat of a mockumentary about background actors. So it's an ensemble piece. Hopefully people can relate to it. Anyone who's in positions where they feel like they're not given enough respect and there's people above them. But overall, it's just funny. And I'm hoping the humor is something people can use right now. And that's one of those cases
I think we can use it at any time.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. But I kind of play a comic foil, I guess, a very over-the-top character who's not much like me. But his name's Todd Randy Riggles, and he thinks he is the extra of all extras. So just really insecure but arrogant at the same time. You know, those people that feel the need to brag and prove themselves, but you can tell deep down they're like,
everybody.
So I just came up with a silly voice for him, too. So it's like, hello, I'm Todd Randy Riggles. You may recognize me. That's my shoulder right next to John Stamos. So, but yeah, on the website, there's a trailer. There's some interviews. There's a link. So when it's on Amazon, there will be a link to that. It should be on Amazon Prime.
Right.
But I'm proud of that. And then I got Stargirl that's coming out in the spring, which I got a co-star role in that. And that's exciting. That's about it. Those are
that's
my promos
at the moment. This is where we'll put a pin in it. And just to learn, what this experience, thank you. Many of the things that I learned and that I loved about your story. I love the tenacity of it. And I love the idea that you were going to go all in for 2 years and give this shot. And you're going to take your shot, and we're going to go forward, and we're going to see what we have. I'm doing the same thing at 71 that you are doing, a generation behind me. I think that there's a tremendous opportunity for all of us to be able to connect with our purpose, to do the things that we are here to do, to help one another, to work. To get, boy, I don't think I could be vaguer, but I'll try.
No, it makes sense
that we get it. This is a chance for us to connect. There's no way without my producer Renee Jaworski that I ever would have met you.
Mm.
Well, maybe, but it was the easy way for the universe to have it happen. And Thank you for giving me the time today, and thank you for speaking about both the process and about what you're doing, and the gifts that you're bringing to the stage. The next time we talk, I'd like to talk a little more about characters and acting and some of the different pieces that you're doing, because there's some fascinating work I want to talk about our character work and how we get into a character and how we develop it and how it comes, because I'd like to know about this guy and some of your other roles and then
I got a large variety.
Yeah,
but I think
well,
one
that's
thing
what
is
I
wanna... like we're never too old to make changes and try to pursue a meaning. And for me, the whole thing is trying to make a difference. You know, how do I connect with people?
Well, thank you for connecting with me. This is exactly what I wanted to hear today, and that's exactly what we can do. But let's go, continue forth. And thank you, Fred. And I look forward to the next time we get a chance to speak.
Yes, thanks for your time. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Goodbye, everybody, and we'll see you next episode.